Good afternoon and welcome back to the Tuesday Afternoon Show. I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson, and we thank you for listening in on WGXC Accra 90.7. And oh boy, one of my favorite people returns to the studio, Stephen Patterson from the Bridge Street Theater. Thank you for coming in again.
Sure, Robert.
One of the things we're going to talk about is the new world premiere of Chiron. But before we do that, we've had you on several times, but we've never really discussed the specifics of how you make some of your decisions. And I think our listening audience would be curious to learn how you and John go about deciding on laying out a season's worth of programs and events. What happens behind the scenes? Do you set out actual goals and sort of do an outline that kind of the plays and concerts you want to present?
Well, it's pretty much John and my own decision, but a lot of the non-theater programming that we have done have been things that have pretty much just fallen into our laps. I mean, a lot of
so
people...
So it means people coming to you with an idea or a request.
People are now approaching us because we have this really, really nice venue now, asking if we would be interested in having them appear. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, you know, we've been really lucky enough to get stuff that's incredibly high quality, and a lot of it really, really very, very local.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, is it an intuitive thing? Where because you seem to have a really great balance between something that's known, something that's completely unknown.
Correct.
And then something that's, what you'd say was entertaining, but still had substance.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a tricky thing, isn't it?
Well, because we're the ones who make the decisions, a lot of it is based on our own personal tastes. Mm-hmm. But we also know that we're serving an audience here, and for the most part, an audience that is not a natural theater-going audience. I mean, I don't think a lot of people in the area here have that sort of theater-going habit, because you know when we came in, there was very, very little in the way of live theater in our immediate area, and it's one of the things that we wanted to help rectify.
So behind the scenes, so you guys are making dinner, you're talking over the schedules. Do you ever have like really different opinions? Like, does John say, "No, this is really important to me"? You're thinking, "Oh, no, that's no good."
No, not really. We actually get our tastes are both pretty well aligned.
Uh-huh. And are you in a position where you have to go, okay, this is going to be a moneymaker, we really should do this? Does that come in at some point? It must somehow be there.
It's always a part of what's in your mind. What we did last year in 2016 is during our season, we actually had audience surveys, and we're asking people, why do you come here? What kind of things would you like to see here? Are there specific plays or events or other things that you would be interested in seeing us bring to this theater? And a lot of our decisions on what we're doing theatrically this season were based on those surveys.
So what about talent? You obviously would hope to find and use local talent,
but we're doing that as much as we can,
and you're willing to go out obviously to New York and other places and get talent to bring into us. So
The two actors from this show that's opening this weekend are both from New York City. But
is that part of the integral part of the discussion? How much local talent can we?
How many people in these shows that we're looking at can we use people from right here in the area? Right. And there have been times when we said, you know, this show either has too large a cast and we won't be able to do it. And so it's kind of been pushed off. Maybe something we can do in the future.
So what about Allison playing Florence? Was that just like the most obvious thing in the world?
And that was a no-brainer.
Which came first, though? Did you think of the...
Well, it was odd. What originally had happened was we had an actor that we'd worked with in the city in the last show that we produced in Manhattan, which was a musical called In Circles, who we have been very interested in getting up here to perform at some point. And he had done a production in the city of Souvenir that he already had in place that they'd been doing in just, you know, little, very, very small way. And when we this was right at the time when we were having this discussion with him, when we were starting to look at putting our season together. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for something for Flo Hale to direct. And she had come in with some shows that, you know, the cast is too large, Flo. No, those things aren't really kind of the kind of shows that we want to do. And so we were trying to find a play both that we would really could really get behind, mm-hmm. that we felt would be really entertaining for local audiences, and also would be something that would fit into her world, mm-hmm. and that she would really be excited about doing. And when Paul mentioned Souvenir, we went, oh dear. That would be perfect. You know, people have been asking for musicals. Uh-huh. They've been asking for comedies. That had a very small cast, which was absolutely perfect. And it was about a world that Flo kind of really knew about, mm-hmm. and and would really be able to bring something to. And then, of course, our development director, Allison Davey, who's this brilliant soprano and, you know, opera and oratorio singer, was the obvious choice for us. Mm-hmm. And as she was a little freak, because she hadn't done any real acting.
I was curious about what her first response was. Did she go, uh-oh?
When we first broached it to her, she said, oh, no, I don't think I can do this. It's, you know, but then, yeah, she got so excited about it and was thrilled. She says, the role is just too good. I can't not do this. And then we were not able to use Paul. Mm-hmm. Flo's musical director, the guy who works with her on her cabaret acts, mm-hmm. and who played Cosme, and is a wonderful, wonderful pianist, mm-hmm. and accompanist. And he was very interested in doing it. And we also wound up co-producing with his theater up in Salem, New York. And they're going to be doing three performances of our production.
Oh, how exciting.
Up
congratulations.
There in Fort Salem in July this year. So, you know, they'll get together for, you know, about a week before and re-rehearse. And, you know, we've kept all the costumes and all the big set elements. And mm-hmm. so those mm-hmm. will all be trucked up to Salem. Mm-hmm. And folks up there will get a chance to see that production too.
Okay, so I can't resist, before we get on to the premiere that we're here to talk about, what about you? You're such a great actor. What's next for you? What do you want to take on?
Next big thing that I'm doing. I got so wiped out last year because it was constant. I think we probably talked about it in the past. I went to Indiana and I was playing King Lear. I came back, and the week that I got back, I was directing this show for us. It was the opening show in our new mm-hmm. main stage,
season, yeah.
which had, you know, 14 characters in it. And so I was having to make sure that was prepared and work on that with her. And that closed on a Sunday, and on Tuesday I started rehearsals for The One Man Frankenstein, and then that closed, and a week later I started rehearsals for our Christmas show last year, Holiday Memories, in which I was the narrator and never shut up. So, I was scared to death that there wasn't going to be enough room in my brain to
Stephen
even
Patterson.
Remember. So yeah. This year, when we were looking at a season, part of it was maybe I'll direct one, and maybe I'll act in one, but let's try and keep me out of that area a little bit more this yeah. year, so I'll have time to concentrate on all the other duties that I have there at
sure.
the theater.
So what are you acting in? What's coming up for you?
That's the fourth show in our season. Mm-hmm. I'm directing the summer show, which is Paul Zindel's The Effect of Gamma Rays on Man in the Moon Marigolds. This was a 1971 Pulitzer Prize winning drama that is great and has a cast of five women.
Mm.
And a couple of the cast members are high school students over here at Catskill High.
Oh, so, how wonderful.
So that's great. But then the fourth show is a play that I did 6 years ago in Hackettstown, New Jersey at Centenary Stage. Was the world premiere there. And this is only the second production that the play has had.
Mm.
So,
and what is it? And what's
it's
your role?
It's called How to Pray. It's a three-character show. It's won some awards. Absolutely wonderful, funny comedy about a woman who reluctantly agrees to act as a surrogate for her brother and his wife who can't have a kid. Mm-hmm. And there are problems. And this all happens before the play even starts.
Mm. And you're playing the brother?
No.
You're playing the wife?
No. No. Not playing any of them.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, the woman who has agreed to act as a surrogate is the female character in the show. There are two male characters. One of the male characters is her boyfriend. He acts as a series of authority figures that she consults about the problems she has. Her brother and his wife, the second that she actually conceives this child for them, they decide that they're going to get divorced. And they want nothing to do with the child anymore. And so she's kind of stuck with this, you know, well, I never wanted to have children. Now what do I do? And everyone she meets, of course, has an opinion about exactly what she should do, but she has no idea. Mm. So this other male character plays her boyfriend and all these other male authority figures. And
that's you?
No.
Oh, no, not yet. Okay. No.
The character that I play, I play a dog, a cat, a 9-year-old boy, who is the son of her current boyfriend. I play a 90-year-old cancer patient who is probably the father of the main female character, whose mother was having an affair with, but who has never acknowledged her.
Oh, my.
And then the most wonderful character that I played in this is a karaoke singing pre-op transsexual who becomes who becomes her best friend, basically by the end of the play they sort of form a family.
Oh, isn't that exciting?
So it's great. It's a really, really lovely play.
How wonderful for you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
So that's the only one I'm acting in.
Okay.
This year.
All right. Well, so please tell us about the new show, world premiere, Kieran.
Yeah, boy.
Opens this weekend.
Were we lucky to get this? Yeah. We have a Pay What You Can preview on Thursday. Opening night is Friday, and it plays Thursday through Saturdays at 7:30, Sundays at 2 for 2 weekends. So it's April 20th through the 30th.
How wonderful. And tell us a little bit about the play.
Play.
It's a two-person?
Yeah, it is two persons. Yeah. The male character plays a playwright named Kieran. And of course, the play is written by Kieran Berry. So this is actually based on a personal life experience about the collapse of a longtime relationship that he had with a singer-songwriter named Jade. And Jade is played by a woman named Benita Jackson, who has previously been up at Bridge Street with a shattering one-woman show that she wrote called Empty Valuables, and which was also a multi-character show. She had to play many, many characters in that. In this play, she plays over 15 characters.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, the guy plays only one character. The female character has to play everybody else.
Wow.
So it's a real tour de force.
How exciting.
Strangely enough, this play, Kieran had a world premiere over at Stageworks back in 2012, over in Hudson, of a brilliant, brilliant play called Tomorrow in the Battle, which was a three-character, very, very serious, highly intellectual, sort of really gripping drama. Mm-hmm. Then the year after that, in their play-by-play festival at Stageworks, we did one of his one acts that John directed and I acted in, which was called Lonely Hearts Ventura, which he culled and edited missed connections listings from the Craigslist in Ventura, California, where he lives now. He's a British playwright, mm-hmm. but he's been living for about the last decade in Ventura, California. Mm-hmm. And
so this is your introduction to his writing.
We'd seen this like, oh my God, jaw-dropping drama that he'd done the year before. And then this thing that was sort of weird and comic and touching. And we went, where is this guy coming from? And when we were looking for new work mm-hmm. for this season, we got back in touch with him and said, do you have anything new? And he said, well, as a matter of fact, I've just finished the first draft of this play that I've written about I became obsessed with writing this play about the collapse of this relationship I had. Mm-hmm. You know, it was starting out to be, you know, he was just writing journals, and he said, you know, this might have the makings of a play. So it was kind of therapeutic for him to get all this down and get it all out. And then it kind of morphed into something else entirely. It's this wonderful, he gave the entire thing the sort of form of a 1930s screwball comedy. So it's hysterically funny. It's really difficult to describe because it's dealing with a very, very painful, and particularly for him, subject, but he wanted it to be like fizzy like a glass of champagne, but, you know, have a little, you know, shard of glass in the bottom. And it became, more than anything else, a play about whether or not he really should write a play about the collapse of this relationship.
Wow.
So it's like this little Russian nesting doll. Lots of levels going on and lots of laughs.
Well, I am excited, and I'm sure the community is. Again, it's a great thing that you're bringing to us, and we are grateful. And I thank you for coming in. As always, though, before we let you get away, we love to hear you read a poem. So I brought in Robert Haas from the book Human Wishes and asked you to read this is a poem called Tall Windows. Whenever you're ready.
All day you didn't cry or cry out, and you felt like sleeping. The desire to sleep was light bulbs dimming as a powerful appliance kicks on. You recognize that. As in school, it was explained to you that pus was a brave army of white corpuscles hurling themselves at the virulent invader and dying. Riding through the Netherlands on a train, you noticed that even the junk was neatly stacked in the junkyards. There were magpies in the fields beside the watery canals, neat little houses, tall windows. In Leiden, on the street outside the university, the house where Descartes lived was mirrored in the canal. There was a pair of swans and a sense that, without haste or anxiety, all the people on the street were going to arrive at their appointments punctually. Swans and mirrors and Descartes. It was easy to see how this European tranquility would produce a poet like Mallarmé, a middle-class art like symbolism. And you did not despise the collective orderliness, the way the clerks in the stores were careful to put bills in the cash register with the Queen's face facing upward. In the house next door to the house where Descartes lived, a Jewish professor died in 1937. His wife was a Dutch woman of strict Calvinist principles, and she was left with two sons. When the Nazis came in 1940, she went to court and perjured herself by testifying that her children were conceived during an illicit affair with a Gentile. And when she developed tuberculosis in 1943, she traded passports with a Jewish friend, since she was going to die anyway, and took her place on the train to the camps. Her sons kissed her goodbye on the platform, eyes open. What kept you awake was a feeling that everything in the world has its own size, that if you found its size among the swellings and diminishings, it would be calm and shine.
I've enjoyed that poem for probably, I don't know, at least 25 years, and that's the best reading of it ever.
Oh, thank you,
Stephen. It's such a great pleasure to have you in the studio.